Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Bill Belichick is going to be the new coach at the University of North Carolina. And man, if someone had told you that, like 2 months ago, if someone had told you that, because this whole thing started a month ago, even like this whole thing started bubbling up like a few weeks ago, like 2 weeks ago, right? With Belichick in North Carolina.
Yeah. And I think my thought at the time was probably, if I remember correctly, okay, he's getting his name out there. It's something that maybe he'll consider, but really he's just trying to leverage this into a head coaching gig or something, an NFL job or something. But obviously, I was well, there are two things. Maybe it started as that, but then as Belichick disclosed, NFL teams hadn't contacted him, and none of the big-time college programs were really going after him. So maybe it was something that started as like, okay, I'm gonna go take interviews, and then through a combination of nobody else being interested, and then UNC giving him $50 million over 5 years.
Yeah.
This is a real big boy offer. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's probably something that appeals to his intellectual curiosity about it. Like, it's a new challenge for him.
A new challenge. And it is also, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons why it could work out, just as it is with any coaching hire. Just in the same way slam dunk hires like Lincoln Riley don't work out, or Jimbo Fisher or whatever. It's just, more than ever in college football, everything's a huge wild card. You just don't know. And I think it's a really good move by UNC. And they don't have a huge NIL game right now. And I think one way to reinvigorate interest from alumni is certainly this. But also, you know, like Belichick's got his challenges in being that guy. And they're like, how do I go from being big time X's and O's guys to now also part of my job is mustering up enthusiasm within the fan base and amongst the boosters.
Yeah, the you're right. The job of a college football head coach is different than an NFL head coach. You play a lot more roles as a college head coach. At least traditionally you do. I know now that NIL and the transfer portal have come about, that the structure of a college football organization looks a little more NFL-like to that point. Bill Belichick is bringing his old buddy Mike Lombardi in to be the GM of the North Carolina football program. We'll get to that in a second. But I think it's interesting. Now, North Carolina reportedly is beefing up its NIL spending part of this. So they were at, I think what I read, Seth, they were at $5 million. Part of this for Belichick, I think wisely, is to say, okay, we need to spend more than $5 million on players. So they're like, look, if you're already spending $50 million on Belichick, then what is it to go ahead and quadruple your NIL expenditures from $5 million to $20 million?
This is the crazy world in which we live. It struck me yesterday where basically people are saying, well, how is this professional football coach going to adapt to this college world where players are getting paid?
Right.
I'm like, what am I missing here? Like, okay, so he's going from a world which is named after professional football, is named professional football because the football players get paid.
Yeah.
How is he going to transition to what is now actually professional football in the college ranks?
Seth, how could he possibly be able to handle what is de facto free agency
football? How could Bill Belichick know better how to handle shifting casts of people who are coming and making their decisions based on money up against a bunch of college football coaches who have never dealt with this before?
Right.
I mean, that part of it makes perfect sense.
It does. That's the part that helps make sense of, hey man, all the Nick Sabans, on the collegiate basketball level, the Roy Williams, the Jay Wrights of the world, all getting into their 60s and 70s, bailing out because this is a foreign creature to them. This is not the college football of my birth. You know, like this is a new animal. Belichick jumping in at age 72 or 73 or whatever he is, is it's fascinating, but it's much more understandable when you frame it that way. Like, okay, like for Belichick, like this looks a lot more like what I'm used to handling than the previous version of college football does.
All the things that Nick Saban said drove him from the game, yeah. Finally, the fact that it is way more like professional football right now, it in my mind, it makes Bill Belichick way more suited for certain parts of today's college game than any college coach or many, many, many college coaches, yep. who don't have any professional experience. So, yeah, that part of it I don't think is as big of a barrier as I think you think at first blush.
What would constitute success at North Carolina with Belichick as a coach? And just to give some context, they've not won an ACC championship since the early 80s. I mean, it's been a long time. Like, I think Lawrence Taylor was on the team the last time they won an ACC championship. He's 65 years old now. So they've not won a conference championship in a long time. Now, they've had very recent periods of spurts of success, you know, where they've risen up and won 9 or 10 games. Look, Mack Brown was the head coach there twice. You know, Mack Brown got the UT job back in the late 90s for a reason. He was really successful by North Carolina standards at North Carolina. North Carolina's had some recent success. They've put more guys in the pros lately. But what would constitute success? An ACC championship?
I think, yeah, what they're
playoff
looking at
appearance.
Is the way they kind of framed it was that the way I can't remember which UNC official, but said, hey, look, Mack Brown took us from a team that was winning, you know, 6 games or so up into a team that a program that can win 9 or 10 games.
Yeah.
But then to get over that next hump, like to just be consistently a 10 game winner plus in the new system, this is what we need. We need that boost. You know, Mack Brown had a really good thing going there at UNC in his mm-hmm. second stint there, until all of a sudden he got up around the age of 71 or 72.
Yeah.
So yeah, so you bring in another 72-year-old.
Yeah, Belichick, if you put those two side by side and say which one conducts himself more like a 72-year-old, it's clearly Mack Brown. I think Belichick, I think it sounds weird to say he's a young 72, you know?
Like, I think that Belichick can work easily, yeah. like, and enjoyably work way longer hours than your average 45-year-old. So I don't think that part of it, I don't think the mental sharpness is gone or anything else like that. It's the biggest thing really is that it's not the NIL or transfer portal or anything else I would think worry about. It's that, man, Belichick, just like any coach that becomes an NFL head coach for the first time, there's all kinds of challenges that he's doesn't even know about yet.
Yeah.
There's things that are going to come up that he's just never considered, no matter how well prepared he is. It's going to hit him in the face where he realizes, Oh, yeah. Oh, some of these kids don't go to class. Right. All those little things on a day-to-day basis.
Do you think he talked to Saban before taking the job?
Oh, yeah.
They've got a relationship, yeah.
Yeah, 100. I would imagine he talked to...
He should.
20 different, you know, prominent college coaches. Yep. Yeah, I don't think he's going into this blind.
No. Oh, no, not at all. I'm just curious what his, you know, like his quote-unquote reference list looked like. It's just to find out what the landscape... Because Saban operated in this landscape and just bailed on it, you know what I mean? Like it, so I think it'd be negligence for him not to talk to Saban and guys like that. Now there are people saying like, okay, how's Belichick going to handle the big thing we've been hearing coaches talk about since NIL came about? Like, how's he going to handle an 18-year-old saying I need more money?
Right.
That happens all the time. These guys now have somebody with the title. A lot of these programs have somebody with the title general manager. Mm-hmm. And Michael Lombardi, who'd been part of Belichick's front office in New England, spent time with several different NFL front offices, spent more time in recent years podcasting and broadcasting, and he was on the Vegas Sports Information Network most recently.
He has me blocked on Twitter.
Blocked Seth Payne on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Frequent regular guest on the Deceptively Fast podcast. And he
back
blocked,
in the day, right.
Back in the day,
yeah.
Blocked you on
I think he's
Twitter.
Upset that I never, I don't know why he's upset. Okay. I think I skewered him once on Twitter, and then he probably screw this guy anyway.
Yeah, so much for us covering North Carolina football to the extent that we need to on this show. But anyways, he's the GM for, but what was your reaction to that when you saw that he's bringing Michael Lombardi in?
I thought, this is all that suckling at the teat for so many years is paying off. Like he's kowtowed to Bill. He knows who his meal ticket is.
Yeah.
And I think that Lombardi's always been kind of known as a guy, or at least a lot of people would say, one of these guys who's got an encyclopedic knowledge and memory of the game of football and everything. And he's really impressive in that regard. But when it comes to actually implementing things, it's a whole different deal. It's like the difference between a college economics professor and a CEO.
Yeah.
The economics professor might know more about economics, but the CEO knows how to get stuff done.
Yeah.
So I think likewise, that's with Lombardi. And it's interesting because I love hearing people up in Boston and their takes on various Patriots of the past. This is Rich Tutcher, who is a legend in Boston radio up there, on his assessment of Michael Lombardi.
Mike Lombardi is a real dummy. His trade is kissing Belichick's ass. That's why people have him on. That's why Mad Dog has him on, is to coax him into kissing Belichick's ass so he can be ridiculed. I mean, and he doesn't realize it. And he continues to be arrogant. He's like the perfect comedic foil. If you were writing a comedy script, this is what you would want. A super arrogant buffoon that you can just keep bringing in and then turn around and make fun of to your friends. He's a buffoon. He's no different than, like, Beetlejuice. Like, Beetlejuice would say he's going to kick your ass, he was smarter than you, and then you'd ask him to spell red, and he'd say ZTVVZ. Mike Lombardi is the sports version of Beetlejuice.
Is he talking about Beetlejuice on the Howard Stern show?
Yeah, Beetlejuice from the Howard Stern show, yeah. So Tutcher,
dude,
is not a big fan of Michael Lombardi. And I'll tell you what, when it comes to some of Michael Lombardi's takes, this is what I would worry about. I'm not worried about Belichick's ability to adapt. Lombardi, this year, in training camp, when there was discussion about Davante Adams wanting a trade, he went on the McAfee show and said, hey, this isn't the NBA. NFL players don't force their way out. And I'm like, it was one of those moments where you're like, wait, am I taking crazy pills?
Yeah.
Like, what? You can list off five guys in the last couple of years that have forced their way off of teams via trade. We here in Houston understand and know this dynamic really well.
Yes.
I don't know. He was talking about an NFL that ended in the maybe early 2010s or so. So
right.
I don't know if Michael Lombardi is, if he can't adapt to the changing and shifting sands of the NFL, which he knows intimately, I don't know how he's going to do in NCAA football.
I don't know. I get them feeling a certain kind of way about Lombardi up in Boston because they're Patriot fans up there. Like I've never rooted for a team that has had Michael Lombardi involved in the operation ever. So to me, I come away somewhat impressed that if he's this big a buffoon, that he's been able to carve out this big a piece of the pie for himself over the years, to me, is somewhat impressive, you know?
Well, he's good, you know, he's good on, because he has that knowledge and and he's, I think he's interesting to listen to. When I can view his tweets.
Yeah.
When I'm not blocked. But I think the whole thing about Belichick is, hey, Belichick, it's not just his players that he gets the most out of. You know, he takes these fringe players and turns them into stars back in the day, and then they leave and they're nothing. He does the same thing with his coaches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got all kinds of kind of, like, let's just say gilded buffoons. People that are really good for something.
Yeah.
And then he can use them in specific roles and manage them. But then they go off to be a head coach or something. And they're blistering failures. So I think maybe that part of it, maybe Belichick is the guy that knows how to get the most out of Lombardi.
The text message, people weighing in on this. I spent 45 plus years in my field. The last two or three, I quickly came to understand I was not ready to work 10 plus hours a day. Belichick will feel the same very soon. Sir or ma'am, very impressive of you to equate yourself that Bill Belichick has the exact same mindset as you. That everybody 45 plus years in their field at your specific age are going to feel the exact same way that you do in your field.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's where I think people get it wrong. And I this is the thing. When you look through it, your own filter, you think about, oh, working 14 and 16 hour days. Wow, what a grind.
Yeah.
You got to remember, whatever Belichick's twisted version of love is, this is it for him.
Yes.
Like, he loves it.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of people in a lot of professions that get to an age where they've just lost their fastball. They love to keep doing what they're doing, but it's not the kind of job that you can keep doing part-time or what have you. I know, like, I just, like, I come from a family where, and I'll talk about the men in my family because I'll go back generations here, so mostly it was men that were working. Like, most of the men in my family pretty much work until they die or they're physically incapable of mm-hmm. working. And it's like they're farmers, they're carpenters, like the guys that they really love what they do and they don't want to stop doing it. Yeah. That's my experience. Like, I plan on working until I'm die because I enjoy it.
Yes.
So I think that's where Belichick is. I think he just genuinely loves what he does.
Yeah, if they fail at North Carolina, it's not going to be because Belichick doesn't feel like working. You know, like, the grind is getting to me. You know, they'll fail because it's hard to win at North Carolina versus Miami and Clemson, you know?
I don't think it ever feels like a grind to Belichick.
I agree.
I think it's just what he does, and he loves doing it, and he probably spent a year kind of jabber about power rankings and stuff, and he's like, oh, I gotta get back to what
I agree with. Clearly, yes, I agree.
My twisted version of love.
My twisted version of love. That'll be the title of his book. Texans back at practice. Astros rumors continue to abound. Rockets win a big game last night. All of that in headlines coming up next.